Welcome to Chronic Combat Conversations, a live look at our best bets, picks, and predictions for every UFC card. With your hosts, TB Scouting MMA and
The Guru, back again for UFC Vegas Costa vs. Vettori. UFC Vegas 41, UFC Fight Night 196, UFC on ESPN Plus 54. I don't care what you call it. I'm damn excited. This, I was going to say middleweight, but I guess we're not sure. This middleweight bout between Costa and Vettori is long overdue. Two of the more interesting personalities that the UFC has to offer. And I guess more the intriguing skill sets as well. Don't you think?
I would say so. I mean, the personalities were certainly on display in their lead up in the Adesanya fights, each one of them. We got to see how big of meatheads they are deep
they
down.
Really are.
Aren't they lovable in that sense? But I will say, you'll see which meathead we both kind of lean towards as we get closer to our main event pick. But as we always do, we start at the bottom of the card. And wow, we have a real last second one thrown together here to make up for a late replacement, right?
See, I guess we're not sure, right? They could always reshuffle it, but it's for now we're going to stick with.
Yeah, it's
as the bottom fight here, which
yeah,
probably say what it is.
Yeah, I generally start by going with UFC stats, so
yeah,
usually they're up to date, but you know, we'll say there is definitely a chance it could still be shuffled. So right now we have to lead off the card, Jonathan Martinez versus Vyad Lazishvili. Lazishvili filling in on short notice here, and Martinez, this fight's going to be at 135 from all appearances. It doesn't seem like they're giving a catch weight for the short notice. And Martinez is going to come in with a 2-inch height, 1-inch reach. And I did not do much tape on Lazishvili, but Guru, you seem to have us a little bit covered here. What do you think?
I didn't get to look as in detail as I would have liked to. But what I did see was I felt that Martinez's quick hands and his boxing at the end of the day were going to, you know, pose a problem for, I don't want to mispronounce his name, Lavalishvili?
Lazishvili.
So I think that's going to be a problem, but I really didn't look far enough in, if I'm being quite frank. I think, honestly, whatever the price is, I haven't seen a line yet. Does anybody have a line? I'm checking Tapology at the moment, which is why I'm a little bit distracted.
There's
no line.
Okay. I'm sorry. I see on Five Dimes that they have Jonathan Martinez is plus 170 and Lazishvili at minus 215.
I don't see that on Best Fight
Odds. You have to scroll down. It's the only line that's supposed to fight right now.
I just refreshed the page. There it is. My bad. There it is. 215 and plus 170. Is that what you said?
Yeah, minus 215 for Lazishvili. I admit that I am not sure, but my guess is that Lazishvili has to have some sort of high level wrestling experience because that's definitely where Martinez is weak. And if the line is set like that for the openers, that means that people are really hitting it. I mean,
I must have missed something.
Yeah, I'm seeing Lazishvili even as minus 170 and his bet down to minus 215.
What?
So far, we'll see what that line actually opens up on FanDuel and DraftKings because Aaron Phillips dropped out of the fight.
I can't imagine that they would do that to Jonathan Martinez, right? Like, would they? Like, would they just grab some crazy, incredible prospect out of nowhere and just throw another quote unquote decent prospect like just to the wolves right now?
Well, I guess in my mind, I mean, Martinez kind of lost his luster as a top prospect as he keeps on getting knocked out. So why not feed a semi-recognizable name from the pandemic to someone that could get a win on their debut? But, I mean, aside from that, I really don't have much to give on this fight, just given how late notice it was in relation to our recording here.
Yeah, listen, he won the vacant bantamweight title, LFA bantamweight title, on, as an underdog. So, you know, he certainly seems to have a a decent upside, but we should move along because
onto a fight where I actually might have a little bit of a play here. We see Lavinia Sosa versus Randa Markos, and I will start off by saying I have had some bias in the past on this show towards Lavinia Sosa, so take everything I say with a grain of salt. I did bet her as a huge underdog against Amanda Lemos and came out looking ridiculous. Like she should have been an even bigger underdog, and the egg's on my face. So ultimately, it comes down to Sosa is actually not really giving up much in height and reach in this fight, where she's normally like 3 or 4 inches shorter and giving up like 3 or 4 inches of reach. Like, she's the same reach as Markos and is only 1 inch shorter. And as far as takedowns, we see Sosa really works her wrestling at a higher rate and better percentage. And her takedown defense isn't great, but I think she really does enjoy getting into the grappling exchanges. So I wouldn't be worried if she gets there with Markos, who has shown in the past that she is not, you know, beyond getting caught in a bad position by a higher level grappler. I tend to lean the Sosa direction. The fight -130 for Sosa and Markos +110.
And we're sure that she's a higher level grappler.
I think I've seen Sosa in multiple fights where even if she wasn't really getting it done on the feet against, say, Ashley Yoder, when she gets it to the mat, that's where she really starts to take over.
You said she wasn't getting it done on the feet versus Ashley Yoder, so that's already not a good
thing. Yeah, but Randa Markos doesn't necessarily inspire a ton of confidence for that's me true. In she that regard either.
That is her last win, a split decision versus Ashley Yoder. So.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I would say both fighters aren't anyone that you really want to go out there and depend on, but one of them is 14-3 and came in as like a pretty decent Invicta prospect and strawweight champion. And Randa Markos is 10-11-1 and has run through the gamut and is getting her one last chance here after an illegal upkick disqualification.
Yeah. Listen, she should have, that was bullshit. That girl kind of like took the easy way out on that.
Fight. Yeah. I would say, it's easy for us to say from this position for sure, I've seen much worse accidental shots or disqualification level shots not produce as much damage. But last time I talked about something on the show that I didn't believe in, I later found out that Alexander Romanov spent 6 weeks in the hospital after getting kneed in the nuts. So it's like maybe there is more behind it that I don't know. But I will say I don't think Markos, you know, especially someone that ended up in a bottom position against Pinheiro, who's not. You know, she was more the judo than the wrestling. And Sosa, I think she's got the wrestling and the Brazilian jiu-jitsu edge. And Markos, I think, is like kind of solid all around, but I just can't trust her.
I think it's time for Markos. I'm not betting this fight at all. I'm not even betting this fight to go the distance. Save your money. I'm sorry that sometimes we don't have plays, but a betting podcast, part of betting is knowing to pick your spots. Save your money. That being said, I probably lean Markos. I think it's time for her to get a win. I don't think she's as bad as her fights have seemed. You know, Amanda Hibas, amazing, you know, kind of a prospect killer, whatever. Sexy, whatever. Mackenzie Dern, you know, whatever. She round one submission. She thought she, you know, hurt herself or whatever. She thought he hurt her. But if you watch UFC Destin, it was really interesting. Markos, like, tried to stop herself, but it, like, she instinctually jumped on her. She even talked about it. She really does. She's like, as I'm falling towards her, I'm like thinking, no, don't. And she's already you know what I mean? So yeah. I can't even imagine what that feels like, that split second reaction. So I do. And Kanaka Murata is somebody I actually think is the quote unquote better prospect than somebody like Sosa. So I don't know. Maybe it's just because I like Markos and she's been around and I want to see her get back to 500 on her record or whatever. But maybe her time has passed at 36 years old.
Yeah. Once again, probably a bunch of bias baked into this fight. So I'll say if I do anything, it'd be a Sosa money line. Not really a prop I love on it. And yeah, definitely. I want to see the face off, make sure that the size differential really isn't there. And that's really all I got on that fight. I mean,
definitely.
In the next one, we got Jeff Molina versus Daniel Da Silva, also listed as Daniel Lacerda, depending on where you're looking. UFC stats just changed it to Daniel Da Silva, so I guess that's what he's going to come out as, making his debut here. This I feel like Jeff Molina is getting a big rub off of his appearance against Arishi Lang.
Arichi Lang.
And he pretty clearly lost the first round in that fight, like pretty handily. And Arichi Lang, who came over without any of his coaches from the Shanghai Institute, and they really had like a last second thrown together appearance. It seemed like there was a lot of pressure on those fighters on that card. And yeah, I really do think he completely gassed out. And Molina, you know, to his credit, did show a good gas tank and really turned it up, kept a high volume. I mean, for one fight, his stats are strikes landed per minute. I mean, 8.83. And he's landing 47%, his opponent 45%. So it's not that he didn't do it efficiently. It's just, you know, it comes with, you know, a bit of caveat. So, yeah, I don't really trust Jeff Molina when they're listing him as a minus 165 favorite against a guy like De Silva, who is probably going to match up well. And I think this fight plays out closer.
I don't know. Again, I didn't see, unfortunately, much of Lacerda's tape. So I don't really have much to say about him. But what I did really like from Jeff Molina was, I mean, other than, I guess I'm not really sure. Listen, that Arichi Lang fight was, I guess that was close. But, I mean, he outstruck him in each round, Jeff Molina.
I thought he got hurt a little bit more in the first round, though, and didn't look as good. Dude, and then it turned up in my mind.
Bro, then it turned up. Then he turned up. He threw 100 and he landed 127 strikes in the third round. He went for 57% striking accuracy. He went beast mode in that. He did kind of drop off at 43% accuracy in the second round, but he outlanded Arichi Lang in each round. And yeah, I am impressed with Jeff Molina, if nothing else, with his toughness and undeniable striking cardio, right? We talk about the different types of cardio with wrestling cardio or striking cardio. It's a different type of work ethic, right? But man, that boy can strike. So I really like his striking, and I don't really know much about De Silva here. I want to spend the next couple days maybe looking into the tape. Luckily, I'll have that. And unfortunately, you know, I hate kind of saying that on the pod.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the reality of it. If we don't have too strong a play, then best not to waste their time too much also.
No, definitely. Listen, and what I do know is what we can all see. And what we can see is his tapology. And his tapology is not great. I mean, Shudo Brazil, Mr. Cage 39, Rhea de Silva Combat 14. I don't know these promotions. He's fighting guys that are 4-2-1, 13-12. Best guy he fought is 20-11, 6-4, 5-0, 2-0, 2-3. I don't know.
Yeah.
Not super impressive to me. No names that I recognize. I guess he recently fought July here, Shudo Brazil 108 against Rodrigo Serafian.
Yeah, I guess I don't really see anything that makes me want to run and place a bet here, because Molina, you know, even if he is the rightful favorite, it seems like it's pretty much covered in the market. I just don't see him proving himself to be a minus 300 at the end of the day. I mean, sure, you know, De Silva could end up coming out flat, but I mean, this is a guy that has 100% finish rate across all of his fights, no matter what. So while they might be like, oh, maybe, you know, the fight ends inside the distance, if you say goes the distance minus 125, that's a pretty solid price. You know, I would say, you know, to kind of go away from De Silva, you know, having a finish, just because sometimes those guys, you see their debut when they face a higher level competition, things tend to even out a little bit more. And Glory MMA for Jeff Molina, so you would think he's with a good camp and getting the right training.
Yeah, and listen, to De Silva's credit, it seems like his only loss is from a shoulder injury. So it's not even really like, that's kind of tough. So I minus 165 though, I don't necessarily think you're paying some sort of crazy price. It seems like the uncertainty is sort of baked into this line.
Yeah. So on to a fight where we have a little bit better of an idea.
Yeah. I definitely want to wait till weigh-ins on that. I want to see those guys face off, because that's the type of fight for me that I'll get like that inner juju and I'll be like, hammer it, bro. Molina, easy.
The guru juju.
that guru juju.
Yes, I mean, yeah, I come away empty-handed. I guess if you ask me to take who the pick would be, it's Jeff Molina, but I don't really have a strong play for you guys here. Our next fight, we got Kama Worthy versus Jai Herbert. A couple guys who came up, you know, pretty exciting as they made their debuts. And they had things kind of go opposite way on them as far as that goes. Now, coming into this fight, we have Herbert as a minus 180 and Worthy as a plus 155. And I just don't know how you can trust Kama Worthy's chin at this point. And, you know, I know Herbert didn't necessarily put on the most awe-inspiring, you know, performances in his two UFC fights, but I think he faced, you know, a really high level of competition given his pedigree off of Cage Warriors.
I was going to say, there's no way around it. And like, there's no way around it. Kama Worthy is a step down in competition for Jai Herbert. Like, it's, there's no way around it. Like, Renato Moicano and Francisco Trinaldo are at least a league above Kama Worthy. So I give Jai Herbert respect for, you know, that those taking those kind of fights. He looked pretty decent against Trinaldo until the bomb went off. And he went to sleep. But I Kama Worthy's chin is like, is getting up there with like Luke Rockhold's chin. Like, I don't, his chin is like all time bad. And like Luke Rockhold, we could have that debate one day. That's an interesting, interesting debate. If is his chin actually that gone, or, but anyway, I think it is.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's, I really do. I don't know what Kama Worthy has left. He's been knocked out, I'm pretty sure, all of his losses, or like almost all of them. One of them was a submission loss, but he's been knocked out in all of his other losses. So that dude has been knocked out seven times by seven different people. Like, that boy needs to needs to put his brain on some ice.
Yeah, I will say, just looking at the things that Herbert had trouble with were keeping his hands low, but I don't think he's facing a fighter that really is intelligent in the way that they get into the pocket to throw. So Herbert should be able to keep the range here. And I just feel like anytime Worthy gets connected on even solidly, and this is something he didn't have to worry about in the Luis Pena fight, but I mean, you know, Devontae Smith, he was kind of afraid to pull the trigger given that he was a former teammate. So Worthy, I think, had a little bit of an advantage coming in, short notice, huge underdog. But then it just didn't make me feel good to see the way that Worthy just gets absolutely dropped by Jamie Malarkey. And you know, the Otman Azaitar fight is like one thing because you know how much power they have. And like, Malarkey's proving he's a really good fighter. But damn, Kama Worthy, that weight cut must be a lot for you because, I mean, that was early in the fight and he really hadn't taken much damage. It landed squarely, perfectly, nice left hook. But yeah, I think Herbert, he proved against Trinaldo, who, you know, is really tough to finish. I mean, he got that nice knockdown, but by sitting in control time for 2.5 minutes instead of letting him get back up, you know, by the time the third round comes around, I mean, Herbert is exhausted at that point, you know, going for the finish desperately, you know, after the first round where Trinaldo lands a couple takedowns, gets a couple submission attempts, lands a ton of control. So I don't think Herbert's going to be facing the same type of grappling attack, and allowing him to stand on his feet and maintain the distance on a guy he has 3 inches of reach against and 2 inches of height. I mean, yeah, I really think that Herbert should have it here. It feels like a pretty comfortable play. I think we're going to be throwing him in a parlay. Is that right?
He has to be played here. Listen, we could go down, right? But I don't think so. I think Herbert has really good head and shoulder movement, man. He may lack that takedown defense, which was a problem, like you just said, versus Moicano and Trinaldo. But I don't think that Worthy is going to make that an issue here. He likes to, you know, use his punishing leg kicks and throw his crazy strikes out there. But I really do like Herbert's variety of attacks more, honestly. And I think that Herbert finds a way to get it done. I am somewhat interested in what you think about possibly considering, and I don't necessarily, I do like Herbert by knockout at plus 110, I guess. But why not consider maybe fading the narrative and it goes the distance? Like, is it possible it goes the distance? Like, is that even feasible?
Yeah, I do think that Herbert isn't necessarily the highest of volume, and both guys are going to want to avoid the finish. So you're definitely not too far out of left field. But as far as, like, the fight goes to decision, plus 215.
Yeah, that's not high enough. Is that really nice?
Minus 300 for inside the distance. I mean, both guys, all of their losses have come inside the distance.
And both of them
are pretty prolific finishers as far as their career goes. So that would be a pretty serious narrative to fade, plus 215.
Yeah. Jai Herbert.
If it moves closer to plus 300 later in the week.
Yeah. And Jai Herbert by decision plus 400, I also think is an interesting prop.
I think parlay piece for me.
Yeah, the money line is the safest bet, especially at realistically. Why get too crazy? At minus 180, that's really not that bad.
Yeah. So here's our next fight. We got Jamie Pickett versus Loriano Staropoli.
Interesting fight. This fight's giving me a little bit of what we like to call agita.
Heebie-jeebies?
Yeah, it's just, no, like, it's giving me a little stress. Like, it's,
yeah, I agree with that.
It's a weird fight, man. It's hard to predict. You've seen Staropoli lose three fights in a row by unanimous decision to Roman Dolidze, Tim Means, and Muslim Salikov. And you've seen Jamie Pickett enter the UFC off a Contender Series win and lose a unanimous decision to Tefan and Chukwe and get obliterated by the Beverly Hills Ninja, Mr. Jordan Wright. What I saw in this fight is that, and this, I'm going to talk it from the side of the guy I'm leaning towards here. What I'm seeing here is that he fought two guys that are, I don't want to be weird, but like are big and scary in terms of their power. And he's now fighting somebody that is not nearly as strong, not nearly as physically imposing. And, you know, I don't think that he's going to be feeling as fearful of this guy. Do you have a feeling of who I'm talking about here?
Because yeah, I feel like we're talking
the Night Wolf, Mr. Jamie Pickett.
Because yeah,
I don't think, and I'm a big fan of this. When you see somebody have a performance like they had, like Jamie Pickett had versus Jordan Wright, it does not get much worse than that. You cannot have a worse outing. Right? So what are the chances? What are the chances he stays that bad or gets worse? Like it's not really possible, right? Because we're saying it does not get worse. He could repeat that. He could get knocked out again in the first round, right? But they didn't put him up against a killer. So he can only do better from his last performance. And against Tefan, that's his UFC debut. Like that's a scary debut, man.
Yeah, and then to face, I mean, Jordan Wright's a finisher.
Yeah, so a finisher, that dude is a ticking time bomb, bro. He just annihilates people for some reason. I was really excited to see him fight Staropoli, and that fight got canceled due to, this fight was canceled. I'm mixing myself up for some reason. This fight was, what was this scheduled for? 2 weeks ago or three?
2 weeks ago, I believe.
2 weeks ago, and Pickett was removed due to COVID. I think it was somebody in his camp, though, right?
Yeah, I'm not even 100% sure. A lot of times they keep out the details on it.
Anyway,
I worry. Should the line really be that wide for Loriano Staropoli -235?
One of the main things we talk about on this show as well is these fighters have to earn these numbers, man. They got to earn this respect. This guy has three decision losses in a row, possibly lost, you know, whatever it is, 7 out of 9 rounds of his last fights. And you're going to pay You're going to pay minus 250 on this guy? What are you talking about? It's this Jamie Pickett at the very least has a puncher's chance. And then let's talk. What happens if it goes the distance? It's not like Jamie Pickett is a complete. I mean, he's just low output.
Listen, I mean, Muslim Salikov landed 3 takedowns on fucking Laureano Staropoli. We're really saying that Jamie Pickett, who's actually like a solid wrestler, isn't going to go to that. And also, Staropoli's never gotten a finish or been finished in the UFC.
Listen, he showed some decent takedown defense against against Deleuze.
A gassed out Roman Deleuze.
Yeah, again. But
he didn't show good takedown defense early in the fight.
And he's not a good wrestler. Yeah, exactly.
No, so yeah.
But I do, exactly, and I do. And even though it shows Pickett at like 1 takedown per 15 minutes, it's just been scored weird because that Tafan and Chukwe fight, he actually did score a great takedown versus Tafan. And then there were a couple times I felt like he was looking for them, but then didn't fully engage. Excuse me. So they didn't really score it. And then if you interestingly enough remember, against Jordan Wright, he went and engaged in the clinch early and was going for a takedown when he gets elbowed in the back of the head. I mean, the side of the head a million times to, you know, and that's what sends him bonkers and eventually to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I really do feel very confident that he's going to engage in the clinch and at the very, and then try to take him down. And he's going to be the bigger, thicker guy.
Longer arms, a lot longer arms for the takedowns and clinch that helps.
Jordan Wright and Tafan and Chukwe are huge. Laureano Staropoli is not the same, like, thickness as those guys at all.
Also, he was at 170 at one point. He moved up to 185. Thank so you. Pickett has fought guys way bigger.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know what? Plus 195 and maybe even Pickett by decision. Let's take a little stabby. I like that.
That's how I feel.
Nothing crazy. Don't go crazy on this fight.
Maybe it's like our dirty dog of the day.
Dirty dog.
Our greasy dog of the day prop, because I really, there is no way you're catching me building Staropoli into some stupid parlay. Like, just no. Mm. Like, just don't do it.
You know what? That's a very good point. And yeah, so it sounds like, you know, I'm not going to say it's a super confident pick overall, because this fight could play out in a couple different ways, but a plus 195, I mean, bro, I'll take a 30% chance.
Don't forget, man. Do not forget. He missed weight versus Tim Means.
Wow.
In just 2 fights ago.
Well, at 170, and that's why he moved up to 185.
He
so,
missed weight. So, listen,
not great.
It's not a right, of course, and that is why he moved up. It's
I think it's time to move out. Onto a fight that I really, honestly, if we spend more than a minute on this, like, I'm just going to tell you, we got to move on here.
Tabitha Ricci.
Yes. Okay. Make whatever noises you want. Okay. Maria Oliveira. Oliveira has a lot more experience than Tabitha Ricci. But I don't trust either of these fighters in this spot. And when you see a minus 255 and a plus 205, and I see everyone parlaying and putting Tabitha Ricci, it's like a blind dogger pass or just like don't bet the fight. So that's my piece. I'm done.
Yeah, I don't necessarily agree. She's back to her regular weight class of straw weight. She fought Manon Fiore, who helped us cash a few weeks ago, who's a savage. Baby Shark is a savage. I do think she rolls. But you know,
I'm not parlaying her. That's
not necessarily touching it. Would like to see weigh-ins, but not again. This is a fight where, again, this is our advice, and this is tough, and it seems like a lot of these fights happen to be this. A lot of these can be learning experiences, and we can learn without having to learn from our pocket. This is a fight we take notes, and we scout, and we wait to see their next fight in the UFC.
I would love to have people having UFC experience before I lay huge money either side. That's really something that I'm trying to learn more, is that if you don't have a sample size and you don't have enough tape, just save your money. You can find enough low-level tape as you want, but how are you going to compare that to the UFC competition that they're going to fight? There's money to be made on it if you're that type of person that has that much time for tape study and all that, and you have access to all these other promotions. it's very difficult, and I don't feel comfortable doing it, so I'm not going to recommend it to you guys.
Do what Nancy Reagan said. Just say no.
Mason Jones versus David Onama. I think I'm going to listen to Nancy Reagan again.
Mason Jones should get it done.
I think -550.
It's probably a chance to, yeah, it's probably a chance for him to get a finish here. This dude Onama is 8-0. I mean, listen, he does have some sort of extensive amateur background.
God damn it, just say no.
Listen to these records. 2-0, 0-1, 2-0, 11-13, 2-0, 8-4, 16-11, 5-1. Welcome to the UFC versus Mason Jones.
Yeah. listen, there's definitely a reason Alan Patrick backed out of this fight. Yeah. But just, you know, pretty simply off the top, I mean, Onama, you know, he is a solid prospect just in general. And yeah, he definitely has a bit of buzz, you know, coming off of him. And I really do think that just -550 for there's facing no a guy coming out of Glory MMA once again, someone that's been training with, who was it? Jeff Molina has probably been training with David Onama, getting prepared for this fight, which is probably a reason why Onama, who also is probably training with Grant Dawson,
yeah,
getting him prepared for this fight. Now, this is someone that's probably been ready in the gym, and I love Mason Jones, like -1,000 against Alan Patrick. I don't trust -550 against someone that's going to come in, and you imagine having a good game plan and him being in shape. So I just don't love a Mason Jones parlay piece here.
I honestly, not to hate, because I love the guy, James Krause, but he's, especially after what we saw with Tim, what he said to Tim Elliott, which of course he came out and publicly apologized for. But honestly, even before that, I felt like, and we've seen it with the hot gyms at the moment, I felt like he's kind of not winning as many fights as he was. You know what I mean? It was for what was really hot, then it was Glory MMA that was really hot, and like I don't know, we just named three fighters on the card that he's gonna have, so let's see if he can get all three or at least go 2-1.
Yeah, I think it's a great question.
Mason Jones should get it done.
He's my pick. Mason Jones is my pick. I just I'm afraid to put money on a fight where I don't have UFC tape on either on one of the sides, especially as a -550. That is just crazy.
Forget the fear. I don't see there being any value.
Wait, Onama 145 or yeah, they're fighting 155.
Oh, well,
wait. No. They're fighting 145. I'm sorry. They are. It's still a lightweight fight.
Oh, wait. Well, you said 145.
Oh, wait a second.
What are you saying?
Yeah, his last weigh-in was 145. They were fighting at lightweight. So Onama is going up weight. So maybe this is one of those spots where, because of the size difference, let's see it at weigh-ins. If there's a legitimate size difference, maybe Mason Jones becomes a parlay piece. So we'll take a look, because Jones is very well-rounded. I will give you that.
Where did you get – oh, well, because his last two fights were at lightweight, and the four fights before that were featherweight, and then he was lightweight before that. So he's floated between lightweight and featherweight.
It seems like a guy that they were grooming to get him used to the weight cuts, and then bringing him down closer when he got closer to the UFC.
The guy beat the 16-11 guy by knee injury in round one. He hasn't fought anybody. Mason Jones is going to beat this guy, man.
He should. Let's see weigh-ins, and maybe I could trust him. We'll see if he ends up on the Chronic Combat Bet MMA page. I hope you guys are following four straight weeks in Weeks in the Green on Bet MMA Chronic Combat.
Let's make it live.
On to our next fight.
Oh, yeah.
We got the
Iron Turtle. The Iron Turtle.
We got it. John Jungpark, the Iron Turtle, versus Gregory RoboCop Rodriguez. This should be a fun fight. I do understand why, at least from a sportsbook perspective, why they would have this fight lined evenly. But now I'm seeing a potential dog of the day here, because the line has moved since the last time I looked. Ladies and gentlemen, Jun Young Park is now -105 and Gregory Rodriguez -115.
Oh, baby.
On DraftKings. This is what I've been waiting for. Okay. So Gregory Rodriguez.
You're not fully there yet because I think this line will creep a little bit
more. Yeah. Listen. Once weigh-ins happen, here's my explanation for you. So Gregory Rodriguez, absolutely incredible physique, 6'3", 75-inch reach. Guy's gigantic out there. Jun Young Park, he's given up 5 inches of height. He's given up 2 inches of reach. He was doing all that stuff against Stefan Nchukwu as well. And Stefan Nchukwu was a guy coming down from 205. Stefan Nchukwu is a guy that I think, you know, just as like a strict stand-up, I think he packs more power than Rodriguez, but I do think that Rodriguez has some solid boxing that he's been working on.
Rodriguez has unbelievable striking. He's not unbelievable power, not unbelievable striking, like not like an elite level or anything, but that boy, like, whew. Man, he put some power in those strikes, man.
And I think that's what leaves him open for
definitely does.
For Park, who loves working the jab, the low leg kicks. He works the calf. He also has a nice straight right that he brings into it. But he stays compact and he stays even. He doesn't get too far out of his range. And then Park, I mean, this guy also loves working in the wrestling. I know in his debut against Fluffy Hernandez, he had a really terrible performance. I will say Fluffy Hernandez's wrestling and grappling was severely underrated by myself until recently. I mean, ask Rodolfo Vieira about it. That's right. I mean, so Park, in his next fights after that, Marc-Andre Barriot, you see Park also take down multiple times. He had John Phillips and Stefan Chukwi.
Didn't he smash that boy as bad as Kazma Chimaev did?
Yes. I mean, because it went the distance and he just kept on going for the ground and pound. And, you know, it's probably not the best look that he couldn't finish him. But one of the things I will say about Park is he doesn't really extend himself or put himself in bad positions on a consistent basis. And I do think he's generally in control of the grappling exchanges he's shown us since that poor debut, which, maybe a little emotional. You know, fighting on that home card, on the Zhang versus Andrade card. So that could have been an interesting dynamic, fighting in front of those fans. But now I just see Park as a dependable guy that I've seen do it more often against a little bit higher level competition. I do think Rodriguez ran into Dusko Todorovic at the perfect time, coming off of a brutal knockout. Yeah. And it really made Todorovic kind of like ease up a little bit on his normal aggression and grappling instincts. And I do think Rodriguez was able to get the better of him physically and overall. And I just think that Park is much more durable, much more prepared for the moment. And Jun Young Park at -105 to Rodriguez, -115. Keep on waiting. The line's going to get wider once they see the different size of wins. But for me, that's my dog of the day, Jun Young Park.
Yeah, you know what? As you continue to talk about it, man, if Gregory Rodriguez is able to get it done here, I think it would be by, like, I think it's going to be by submission. And I'm just not sure. I'm not sure that Rodriguez is in that category of people that can submit him. Because you look at this, man, I'm actually impressed. You scroll down, 2016, yeah, he lost by rear naked choke. But to Shavkat Rakhmonov, we know that name. That dude's a beast. So, you know, you lose to Shavkat Rakhmonov, and then you look two fights up. He beat Ray Cooper III, the dude that beat Rory McDonald in PFL. That dude's a beast, too. So when you see names like that so low down, like in the amateur – not the amateur, but the regional fight scene, man, you gotta stop and take, like, a little bit of a note. So I am a – not that that's why I'm on Jun Young Park, but – that's something I certainly like compared to somebody like Gregory Rodriguez, who last year got knocked out by Jordan Williams. So I think that makes it that – I mean, I feel comfortable playing Park here, and I'm going to wait till weigh-in. Actually, you know, welterweight – what middleweight? Jesus. Middleweight. Still, got to make sure that they're weighing in properly. Don't want any of that Paulo Costa syndrome. And I think we've fleshed this out enough. I'm excited to play Park, hopefully, at plus money. That would be pretty cool. You ready for the next one, big guy?
Yeah, yeah. We got Nick Negomorianu versus Ike Villanueva. Honestly, this fight is so sketchy, but it sketches me out even more seeing that Negomorianu is a minus 225 and Villanueva is a plus 185. I feel like Villanueva has given up a lot of size in a lot of his fights, and coming in as actually the guy who's 1 inch taller, I know he's giving up 5 inches of reach, but you know, Villanueva is a solid striker, and I do think that if it gets in these pocket exchanges that Negomorianu loves to initiate and just walk forward into.
Run forward.
Yeah, it could get ugly, and I don't know if a finish comes because Negomorianu has shown to have, like, a pretty solid, sturdy chin. I mean,
bro, just runs forward.
I would say Villanueva as a plus 185 underdog. I'm not telling you to, like, throw anything crazy out there, but, like, I like that. I think that's super interesting.
I just, again, you look at level competition. He lost to Sergei Safarov. What's this guy's name?
Safarbag Safarov.
That dude is the worst. And he barely beat Alexis Kammer. I mean, it was a split decision. He probably won it unanimously. But in my mind, I mean, he probably should have won it unanimously is what I meant to say. But he was a plus 200 underdog going into that fight, so they didn't even expect him to win.
Yeah, and Kammer really isn't impressive overall.
No, not at all. And Ike Villanueva, I feel like it's a bad rap for, you know, just kind of, I don't know, just being a brawler, I guess. He's just in there for his check, and he's either going in there to seemingly get the finish or get finished. I just felt like, and this was something you touched on, right? So 5 inches of reach disadvantage for Ike Villanueva, possibly a problem. But where do we think this fight's going to primarily take place for somebody like Nick, who's going to run forward? It's not going to take place at kickboxing distance, I'll tell you that much. But he's going to try to close that distance. And when you're getting close range, having a longer arm to try to get out is not as efficient as having a shorter arm that you can quickly jab in and out. I think in the pocket, I think in close range, I think Villanueva might have a chance. Unless we're totally underestimating his speed, unless there's a major speed issue.
I really don't think so.
That range could be a problem. So I don't think I'm going to play anything crazy, but I don't know. I think I could get it done. He's 10 years older, but it's 10 years more experience in a division where age doesn't matter as much. So that's, I think I feel pretty decent. I always say weigh-ins, but I want to see face-offs for this one.
I agree. I mean, but yeah, little underdog shot here. Not the dog of the day, but I'll take a little shot on plus 185.
Let's do it.
Yeah. So Francisco Trinaldo versus Dwight Grant. Man, honestly,
these fights are weird ass fights, man.
Yo, stay away. Stay away.
What? No.
I'm not touching this. I am not really? Touching this one. No.
All right. I like Francisco Trinaldo here.
Why?
Why? Because he didn't beat Stefan Sekulic. That's why. Because he's that bad. That's why. That is really why.
Trinaldo's output.
But it's don't trust Trinaldo's output. How about Grant's output?
I don't trust either of their output.
Okay, so I think that I know for a fact that Trinaldo at least puts on a damn fight. Grant spends his time dancing, running around, looking for power shots. That dude's goofy, man. He's literally goofy.
Minus 130, like, is that a straight play?
No, decision. What are you, nuts? This fight is going the distance. These boys don't get finishes. Trinaldo, yeah, he got that sick finish of Jai Herbert that we talked about. But, like, who did he finish? He's finished Evan Dunham. He got finished by Kevin Lee. Got the doctor stoppage versus Paul Felder, which is eons ago. So other than that, he has 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, 4 out of 5 fights in a row, basically went the distance. That's 5 out of 7 there. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I mean, 6 out of 8, I should say. Sorry. Can't do math. Math is not my thing. 6 out of 8. 6 out of his 8 last fights have went the distance. I don't see why this fight isn't the same thing. Dwight Grant's tentative. And let me tell you this. We were on Trinaldo. Maybe I was on Trinaldo versus Salikov. I think you love
Salikov. No, I was all over Salikov.
Yeah. I was stupidly on Trinaldo. I didn't play much. But what I will tell you, and you're a very big Salikov fan, he pushed Salikov. Yes, Salikov won all 3 rounds, but he pushed Salikov in a way that Salikov had not been pushed before. So you go back and rewatch that tape. Muslim is tired. Muslim has to continue to throw out different things to try to rock and hurt Trinaldo. And he gets hurt himself, Muslim. That is a good fight. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he gets whooped, but Trinaldo pushes him. And this is, without a doubt, a step down in competition. Muslim Salikov, like you said, is a beast. And Dwight Grant is not a beast. So the only thing I do give him is that he's fast and he's got power.
That check hook is live. It's live enough for me to not trust Trinaldo not to get knocked down once. And then if I knew Trinaldo was like a little bit more of a wrestler overall.
Here it is. Are you ready for it? It's something that we learned about. Are you ready? It's on you. It's on DraftKings. So it's the way you can bet on the money line, but it's either by finish only or decision only. So it eliminates the other option. So for example, we can get decision only Francisco Trinaldo at -150. So that means if it goes to decision and Trinaldo wins, we win.
I love that.
If it goes to decision and Grant wins, we lose. And if there's a finish, there's no bet. We get our money back.
Yeah, I'll do that because I don't think that Trinaldo loses a decision. The only thing I'm worried about is him getting finished. So, yeah, give me -150, decision only DraftKings. That's actually a pretty cool idea. We might play that shit.
There you go. I like that for you. I like the plus. I think that you're getting you get Trinaldo by decision at +180. You're probably gonna get a better price on FanDuel when they post it, because DraftKings has it at 180. Oh, they have it posted. You're getting Trinaldo at +200 by decision. I think that's a pretty good price, honestly. So, and then or you can do our other favorite thing, where we can do our over thing. So you can do Francisco Trinaldo to win. And over 1.5 at +120, or over 2.
Yeah, I like getting rid of that knockout risk, though. That's much cooler.
Yep.
But
so there you go. So that's so you could parlay. What was our thing that we wanted to parlay earlier, Herbert? I actually like that. So let's play that for the folks on air. Are we thinking about that -150 decision only Trinaldo to Herbert? Straight up. +159.
That's interesting. I could certainly use that as a parlay piece.
Like, that's the parlay. Or unless you want to keep building from there.
But yeah, I mean, well, I think that sounds good. On to our next fight here. We got Alex Caceres and Sungwoo Choi.
Another fight that's giving me agita based on these lines, man.
Yeah, I will say, I don't know why Choi is such a big favorite.
Because he's becoming more he's popular, man.
Yeah, 41%.
He dyed his hair blonde for his last fight. He's learning English. He actually is a marketable fighter, man. I like him.
I agree. I just don't like looking through just his stats. I'm not overly impressed, but a lot of that was spent on his back against Movsar Evloev and against Gavin Tucker. So definitely not the best of looks for him as far as having to deal with that. But then when he comes back and he gets these beautiful wins in the stand-up and actually showing improved or I mean, we don't know if it's improved takedown defense or just facing worse wrestlers. But yeah, ultimately, I don't think Caceres' takedown offense is really that high level. He's only done it recently. And I think if this fight happens at distance, Caceres is very good at not getting touched, but I just don't know if he's going to be offensively prolific enough against a guy that has a better reach and really clean stand-up. And I just see, like, I could see Caceres winning a round here for sure.
I see Caceres, like you're saying. You, dude, you're on it. I think you see Caceres winning the first round, being too shifty, a little weird. Oh, we should have bet Caceres dog, blah, blah, and the line flips, whatever. And then you see Sungwoo Choi start to figure him out, start to kick that leg, start to clip him up a little bit. Caceres starts to slow down. And all of a sudden, that shiftiness, that unpredictableness is a little bit more predictable because, you know, Caceres' game has, you know, is out there, man. He's been in the UFC for a while now. So, I mean, he's got more fights in the UFC, I think, than he's, like, has years alive. Like, he's crazy. Not really, but damn close to it.
Yeah, I mean, listen, so ultimately, my play on this fight, because I don't, while I do want to, like, play it, it's not going to be a heavy one. I do really like, you know, Choi by decision. I believe it's, like, what, plus 100? And it's really not giving you the best value, but I do think that that's how it happens. And if not, you can also say Choi. I mean, I think it could be one of those like really weird ones. So wow. split decision, a plus 450 for Choi to win by a split decision. But if you just want it to be like, does this fight end by, you know, like a split decision, man, I'm trying to find that because that's a fun one for me. Yes, here we go. Split or unanimous decision, just in general, plus 330. I think this fight could be a little weird, and Caceres' movement and defense can make it look closer than it is. That's my ultimate, maybe a little baby play on that. But, yeah, plus 100, Choi by decision.
Yeah, and you know what? We should – if you guys like that play, I recommend playing it now. I fully expect that line to be minus 115. Or even more of by fight day.
Yeah. Next fight, we got Jessica Rose Clark, a fan favorite and a Chronic Combat favorite of ours, versus Jocelyn Edwards.
Who was also a Chronic Combat favorite of ours.
Honestly.
Cashed on.
Honestly, we love it.
Our one of our original dog of the day is versus Wu Yanan Wu.
Yes. Yes, exactly. And coming into this fight, I mean, I think I'm going back to the well on the Edwards side. I see a 3-inch height advantage, a 6-inch reach advantage. Edwards is 8 years younger. Also, Clark coming off of an ACL injury and some new additions up top that honestly, like
the weight cut difficult.
Nah, but I mean, she moved up from 125 to be a 135er. So I'm not so worried about it, but it's just like, I feel like she's gotten a lot more sponsorships, a lot more of this stuff. She's become a lot more of a face as far as the UFC goes. And Jocelyn Edwards, I really like her game. And that loss to Carol Rosa is really not bad at all in retrospect, especially given that Rosa had to rely on her wrestling to really keep it, you know, a fight on Rosa's side.
Yeah. Listen, I find myself quite conflicted here. I like Jocelyn Edwards' general length, striking, and grittiness, but man, Jessica Rose Clark has at least what you've seen, man. She just seems like a beast. It seems like a switch kind of flipped in her through this ACL surgery. And through the things that she's kind of been through. And she seems to be taking this stuff more seriously, I guess, other than the new additions, which I don't want to say she's not taking things seriously.
Yeah, yeah. No, I don't think so.
You know, but like, you know, it's just interesting. But man, one thing I think could be really quite difficult for Edwards, and it draws me off of wanting to play her as dog of the day once again. She has shit takedown defense. And Jessica Rose Clark, while UFC stats won't necessarily show, like, all of it per se, like, all of her skill, because numbers aren't everything. What is that thing? I think she says that she's, like, averages, like, one takedown per 15 or something like that. Right. But she's actually, like, has a wrestling background, like, wrestled in, I think, college. Like, she's a good wrestler. And she's willing to, I really do believe that she's willing to wrestle more. And I think that if you're her, your game plan has to be, yeah, you want to use your striking, but she's probably been working, if she's smart, she's been working her striking to set up her wrestling. And you got to wrestle this tall girl that's going to fall over like a tower if you trip her right. Because we've seen that she has shit takedown defense at 37%. Carol Rosa wiped the floor with her with the wrestling, man. Wuyanan got a takedown in there. So I think that that's a major, major liability. We know that Jessica Rose Clark is thick with four capital C's. So I really do think that she's going to use her wrestling, man, and could get it done. It's hard to bank on game plans and what you think somebody's going to do as opposed to what they've quote unquote showed versus somebody like, you know, in their UFC fights like Jessica Eye or, but I don't know. And listen, one last thing before I say, I don't know it for the millionth time. Sarah Alpar, man, she smashed Sarah Alpar. And that was a crazy ass fight where Tyone just let her die 3 weeks before her wedding. But look at her last loss before her UFC loss to Carol Rosa. Boop, boop. Oh, who is that? An LFA 55 on the John Jones card. A split decision loss to Sarah Alpar. November 2018. So that's not great.
It's not. I will say I'm probably talked off of placing a bet on this fight, but I'm not running to back Clark at this point. I think I have a bias as far as liking her a lot in general. I'm trying to fade that bias, but at the same time, don't want to make a stupid play. I just don't trust the wrestling for more than one round from someone that hasn't used it like that.
Here is the fucking play. Are you guys ready for this? Is everybody ready for this? Fade the fucking narrative. Fight doesn't go the distance, plus 215. Let's go. Right? Maybe Rose gets that finish. Or maybe her knee gets out or something and she gets finished. She's never been finished.
Her last fight was her first finish in the UFC. So I'm not – I don't think I'm fading the narrative here.
Fuck it. Don't fade the narrative. Nah, listen, probably stay away, but I like Clark here.
That's fair. Co-main event. Grant Dawson versus Ricky Glenn. This is another veteran test for Grant Dawson. The line is crazy. Minus 380. It was
up to minus 400 on FanDuel.
Yeah, and you know what? It was so sketchy to see Dawson not land one takedown on Leonardo Santos.
I think he did get one at the end.
Technically not scored that way. I think Santos tried pulling guard.
That's
a and then he ends up getting ground and pound, stuff like that. But, geez, I mean... Grant Dawson, are we trusting the smaller guy? And
I don't think Ricky Glenn is takedown defense. Everything I saw from Ricky Glenn, man, he's long and he's got that good check hook and he's good at using his range, man. But the way he stands with his hands and he just kind of stands a little stiff, a little straight up with his hands. He's susceptible to being taken down. And you go look at his stats, man, if you go pull those up for the people. Click on Ricky Glenn, man. Scroll up a little bit to Ricky Glenn.
I'm on Ricky Glenn's page.
Yeah, thank you. His takedown defense is 66%. So that's not terrible. But when you look at somebody like Grant Dawson, who now when you look at his stats – I would say look at them with a grain of salt because he fires so many takedowns off that his percentage isn't high. And then obviously you talk about that Leonardo Santos fight where he went 0 for 10. So that's going to tank your takedown accuracy. But he's still at 34% at 3.44 takedowns average per 15 minutes. Like, this dude is going to spam takedowns. And Ricky Glenn throws kicks. And when he throws these kicks, you're liable to get caught, or you're liable to spin, or you're liable to fall down, man. And I think Grant Dawson does win. It's just like, I feel like a fucking broken record, man. The line is just too crazy. I can't trust it here. Maybe you build him in a parlay if you feel that good, but he's really shitting apple pie, man. Ricky Glenn's a gladiator, man. He's a savage. I fuck with Ricky Glenn. He's a you know, old timer, 2016.
Yeah. Here's what I'll say is if there was a fight to fade the narrative, potentially Dawson by decision is plus 130. Dawson by submission is plus 250. Ricky Glenn has been sub 2 times in his career, one by a rear naked choke. Other one looks like it came a little bit earlier in his career. But
I like that.
I do think that, you know, Glenn had a nice early knockout last fight. I'm not sure he's ready to deal with the wrestling pressure. And I do think over time, Dawson wears him out, and where people are going to play the plus 130 decisions so that they don't have to do the money line. I do like Dawson to get a finish here if he's going to win this fight. So I'll take submission plus 250 and run away with that.
What is him by finish? Because God forbid it.
Yeah, I mean, say it turns into a ground and pound, whatever, but... All right, so let's take a look. So method of victory,
plus 140, that's
double chance, plus 140.
Yeah,
there you go.
No, that's the way you play it.
All right.
Listen, and I'm also very confused. You know, we'll spend a second more time on this because it's the co-main. I'm a little confused as to, like, what's happening for Ricky Glenn here. Like, why did they do this to him? Like, he gets a knockout win versus Joaquin Silva when they don't even expect him to, and Joaquin Silva's, like, not even – like that good, I guess, right? Lost 3 of his last 4. So, I mean, it's a pretty decent competition, I guess, right? If we're lumping Ricky Glenn into that decent competition. So it's just like, why Grant Dawson? Why? It's just a weird fight, no?
I think he's a recognizable enough name to step up from Leonardo Santos. Neither guy was ranked, without being too big of a step up, because Dawson didn't necessarily run through the competition in that fight, even though he did end up that late finish.
Yeah,
I ultimately think that this is another stepping stone for Dawson. I will probably fade him once he gets to the top 15.
Yeah, I agree. This is probably not the spot to fade him, but I do think that it is time for this crazy ass main event.
All right, folks.
We still have no idea what weight class is going to have.
No idea. Costa saying he can't make weight. I think I have no idea what's going on. It doesn't matter to me. Honestly, as long as they end up fighting, that's what matters. Because you want to talk about fading the narrative. This is where I'm starting to get a little bit annoyed in breaking down this fight, Guru. Everyone is saying that Paulo Costa is the superior striker, easily wins that on the feet, defatory wrestling. I'm sorry. Did we look at the striking statistics of Costa versus Adesanya? As opposed to Adesanya versus Vettori, because Vettori didn't really get outlanded by that much on the feet, and Costa, I mean, absolutely embarrassed. So to me, what I see is that Vettori has developed good pace and pressure, that he's developed more than just the 1-2 to walk behind. He now checks leg kicks, he throws leg kicks, and he throws combos. He's got an uppercut now. He really has diversified his game. And as much as, you know, Cordero gets me upset at Kings MMA sometimes with, like, his, like, oh, you won that round. And, like, maybe that's where a little bit of Vittori's, like, I beat Adesanya comes in. Because, like, I don't know. Cordero's weird like that, man.
I think he's bullheaded by nature. But Cordero does love to fluff his fighters, man. I don't really dig that. I love what was it? The fight during the Contender Series. I think it was this week, right? He's like, dude, it's like one. Oh, it was the main event that cost me my parlay. He says to Parsons, he's like, bro, what could be, it's like, yeah, whatever, 1-1, but you're down 2-0. Go get this finish, man. Go get him. And he goes out there with that gusto, man. And he ends up creasing out that decision. Do I agree with it? Not necessarily, but like, he sure as fuck made it difficult on the judges. So that's all you can do, man. Try to confuse people. So back to what we're actually talking about here. Marvin Vettori, how are you going to knock out Marvin Vettori? You think Kelvin Gastelum has a blockhead? This dude got a blockhead, man. You're not knocking out Marvin Vettori here. And again, you want to play some MMA math? Let's play some MMA math. Israel Adesanya is one of the best strikers the UFC has ever seen, right? What possibly MMA has ever seen. Up there with Anderson Silva. I mean, really, one of the best. Possibly even revolutionary to the sport at this point. Okay? He couldn't knock out Vettori. Twice. 8 rounds. No knockout. Paulo, where's my juice? Costa? That's the dude that's going to do it? Why? Bro, he is the most overrated fighter in the UFC. Possibly in UFC history. He's number, what is he? Isn't he number one right now or number two? Like, what the what has he done? He hasn't fought since he lost to Izzy. He pulled out of 2 fights versus Whitaker and versus Cannoneer. Nobody's talking about that this week. Why? Because we're all so excited to see him that we want to forget that? Didn't he get some sort of hair head surgery thing? What the fuck is happening with this guy? Now he shows up and his manager's trying to negotiate 195. Why? He's a wrestler? What the fuck is he going to do with an extra 10 pounds? Strike and gas out? I don't understand it at all. Marvin Vettori is going to win this fight. It's just when Marvin Vettori will win this fight. I honestly think an interesting play, not my favorite, an interesting play is Vettori by submission or decision. Because I don't think it's a knockout. Because we know that Marvin Vettori has pillows for hands. And I just don't think it'll go that way. I just see him tired on the floor and he's punching. And then he just goes in for that rear naked.
Yeah. I mean, Vettori took Adesanya's back. Adesanya was able to reverse out of it. If that happens in this fight, it's because Costa's dead tired. I don't see how Costa gets past the third round and still has energy to keep going, even if it's a high-output affair, especially if it's a high-output affair. Adesanya outlands Costa 4-1. Vettori gets outlanded at 1.5-1 pace and actually makes it somewhat competitive in the time that he's standing on the feet with his pressure. He actually gets him up against the cage. And I think if he was willing to pull the trigger a little bit more, he might have won the stand-up against Adesanya. I just don't think Costa is really as high volume as his stats show, because when he starts really piling it on as he TKOs guys standing or whatever, you know, you're unleashing like 15, 20 strikes in a matter of like 10 seconds. And that really juices up your statistics. I mean, to me, you see it, you know, what he puts up against Adesanya, what he does against, you know, Uriah Hall in the early rounds, it's really concerning. I don't trust Costa. I mean, if you just want to save Vettori and you want to use him as a parlay piece, you can do that. But -145 on DraftKings right now, I mean, I might just play it solo without doing any sort of prop here. But to get into a couple props that I like on this fight, we have our methods of victory. And like you so kindly talked about, I really think a Marvin Vettori round 3, 4, 5 submission is totally in play. +550 just for a submission. I'll take that for Vettori. Also, while that'll be a smaller play, I mean, we're getting to, I mean, you guys haven't seen it yet, so you have to know it's coming. We got our play of the day here. So right now, if we go to our fight parlays, because that's where I want to end up for this one, we're going to do to win fight and total rounds on DraftKings. Go all the way down because we got to get to the main event here. We got Marvin Vettori and Paulo Costa. So Vettori to win and over 1.5. No. We're at -120. To win and over 2.5 is +100. I want to do -120. Like, I don't even know if you have to parlay that if you're dropping. For me, I'm throwing a full hundo. So do I want that? Like, Costa could gas out after the second round. Do I want to take that chance? Do I need that +100?
You could put 6 units to win 5. I mean, that kind of thought.
120 to win 100. That's the deal. So, I mean, listen,
My play of the day, Marvin Vettori to win in over 1.5 rounds, minus 120. If that over 2.5 hits also, I might sit here feeling a little silly after that I didn't take the plus 100. But, guys, I don't trust Costa's gas tank. I don't trust Costa with all this bullshit going around, this extra weight. It's like a Nick Diaz type of thing where we thought Nick Diaz is going to decision and he ends up getting finished because he comes in terrible fucking shape. Listen, I just don't see Costa making it the distance against Vettori here, and that's where the money has started coming in, with saying that this fight is going to go the distance, right?
And not for nothing, this is still like fading the narrative, right? The lines keep swinging in for Costa, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, this fight over 4.5 is minus 115. End inside the distance. We got to go the distance is plus 100. I don't think that happens.
I think it's possible it does, honestly.
It is, but I just don't think it happens. So I'm just saying Vettori and over.
I love those bets. I love that. You know, you already know that I played that with you. Another way to slice this pie, I do also like if you want a little bit more value. And you also like the over a little bit. Vettori, round 4-5 decision plus 140. It's like the 2.5, except it's over 3. So, that just about does it. It's for risky. Us.
Yeah.
Marvin Vettori is the bet, man. That's the bet. We went an hour in 10 minutes to tell you that Marvin Vettori, you got to play him.
There you go, guys. Hell yeah. I mean, hey, there you go. Hope you followed us this far because that's our best play. And make sure you check out our Bet MMA tips on Chronic Combat. If you want to see what our official plays are for winning weeks in a row, take us away, Guru.
No, absolutely. Thanks so much for tuning in. Guys, if you've made it this far, please like our videos. We need those likes. Subscribe. Send it to your friends. Share it around. Follow us on Twitter at Chronic Combat. Follow us on Instagram at Chronic Combat Conversations. You can follow me at Guru Scouting MMA on Twitter, Verdict, Instagram, and Tapology. And you can follow my lovely co-host, TB Scouting MMA, on all the same awesome platforms. Remember, yo, next week, October 30th, at 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. 10:30 a.m. Eastern Standard Time on ESPN Plus, the numbered event that is not a pay-per-view technically because you don't have to pay for it unless other than ESPN Plus. UFC 267 is next week. Jan Blachowicz versus Glover Teixeira for the belt, for the light heavyweight belt. And you've got Peter doesn't know when to knee him Jan. Versus Corey Sanhagen for the interim bantamweight championship. Man, this can be a good ass card. Too bad it's like for breakfast. I'm excited for it either way.
Hell yeah! Well, I hope you guys join us then. We'll see you next week.
Yeah, we're gonna have a guest. So hope you tune in. Actually,
stay
tuned. We have a very special guest actually. So please stay tuned.
Take care, guys.
Be good.